As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to The Athletic NBA Show, Monday through Friday, on The Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to Tampering.
For this beautiful game of basketball that we all love and talk about every single day.
With Sam Panic.
To be able to bring people together.
What do you do, baby?
Reportedly at the center of an NBA investigation
into tampering accusations.
And the message to executives in the league is
stop talking about players on other teams.
What did I do?
And the charges filed.
Impermissible contact.
Was it right or wrong?
Tampering charges are really difficult to prove.
You know me, I talk.
Kind of awkward to even talk about it. I can't even mention teams anymore.
Ask me what I like to play with Kevin Durant.
The trial you want with tampering.
They're always ahead of the rules.
It's not rocket science.
I tampered with the guys.
I didn't tamper. I'm just telling you what happened. I'm just telling you what happened.
Hello and welcome to the Tampering Podcast. I'm Sam Amick, NBA national writer at The Athletic, here with Fred Katz out east, Anthony Slater out west. Gentlemen, there are certain times of the year that end up being busier than others. And while we anticipated going into the latest episode of Tampering and planned on talking all things play-in tournament, which we still are, all things playoffs, which we still are, We're going to start today's show with some of the chaos that always comes with this time of year, because even with the play-in, you know, which involves an invite to the vast majority of the NBA to have its season prolonged, there are still a fair number of teams that are done. And that means inevitably that we have coaching changes and we have news and headlines. So today, I had a hell of a morning, guys. I'll be honest with you. It was as remote mornings go because I'm at my house. It started early after a night when, you know, the Frank Vogel news of him being fired by the Lakers was broken by ESPN just as Frank was addressing the media. That was awkward, I think unprofessional. We'll get into that in terms of Frank and the way he was handled on the way out. The Lakers following morning still don't announce the choice, still don't tell Frank about his choice. And for the record, can share that, I mean, while LeBron James was addressing the media at 9:05 a.m. Pacific time and doing a fine job of breaking it all down, the coaching staff had still not been told about its future at that time. And then eventually, I think roughly an hour later, they announce that Frank is out. We're going to get into that. And then as an aside on the coaching front, Sean Sharani and I had reported that Alvin Gentry was told by the Kings that he was not going to be back for next season. That was expected, but part of the bookkeeping that comes with this time of year. So that's a lot to throw at you gents, but how the heck are we doing this morning?
Good. This is, I believe it's called like Black Monday in NFL circles, right? There's always seven head coaches or something like that get fired. It's a little bit more staggered in the NBA because only 10 teams now don't make the playoffs.
Right.
But the two coaches who don't have a job on Monday are the ones that are the most disappointing, at least out west. I mean, I guess Thibodeau would have been the other one that we were maybe monitoring today.
I don't know if Alvin himself is that disappointing. He's just
the situation. Well, Vogel himself is not really that disappointing, right? It's more the situation. The Kings and Lakers went for it and didn't even make the play-in. And yeah. Same with the King or the Knicks. So, you know, it isn't a surprise, but yeah, two of the 10 are gone. Remember the teams we talked about last week? All the 10? These were the two most disappointing.
Yeah.
I'm just waiting for Black Monday for beat reporters to find out.
What does that mean?
Sam Amick's out. Season's over. Sam
Fred
Amico's
Kent's
coming
has not
in.
Been told. Wow. Yeah. We're going there. Fred has not been told, but I can report he is no longer the Knicks beat writer.
Now I got to do this podcast having found out that I'm out.
Right.
It's really uncomfortable.
I'm going to break it on the pod. And
I haven't been told
somebody
shit.
Else in. That line is going to live in infamy. I haven't. Frank Vogel to the media. I haven't been told shit. He was finally told shit roughly 12, 13 hours later. I know it takes a long time to write the 150 words on that press release with this Vogel news that we knew was coming. Let's kind of do the condensed version of that. Just quick thoughts on how this was handled. I've had my opinion confirmed by a few people who are part of the situation. And I really do think it's Frank Vogel won a championship with the Lakers. I'm fine with them choosing to fire him because they need a fresh voice, whatever. It's their choice. He's got 1 year left. But he won a championship with the Lakers. And to go out with this kind of style, however, we can't speak to how the news got out. We don't go into that kind of territory. But regardless, even once the news got out, to me, go ahead and hit send on the statement, on the release, and get it out there and let everybody realize that, you know, that this is what has happened. I think it's unfortunate and unprofessional the way they handled it.
It's extremely unfortunate. And you know what? Quite honestly, I get why everybody's saying he won a championship with them. He deserves the respect of being told face to face, or at least not finding out this way, or at least after it gets out to a reporter and becomes public information. That just don't let the guillotine hit the head and just have like a blunt hit and then continually chop at the head for 13
at least for the
hours.
Visual, Fred.
Well, this is I got to use imagery on a solely audio.
If Game
of
Zones
media.
Were still alive,
can I have somewhat of a pivot version of the take?
Yep.
I think this is good for Frank Vogel. I think it makes him look good, right? Like the entire situation.
Yeah, maybe
fine,
on optics,
going back
but
to
it
even
sucks
mid-season
to
now.
It sucks to live through, though. I mean, he's had a really bad 24 hours, probably. Even if he knew this was coming, he's had a bad 24 hours.
I'm just saying, the way it went down only confirms any type of, like, he doesn't even have to go out and do interviews and, like, try to explain to people how, like, unsettling the situation was and all the mistakes people made and how unprofessional at times it was run. Because he can just be like, look, like, we can look at 9 different things during the season, including look at how it ended. I'm just saying, I think Frank Vogel should be fist pumping how it happened.
That's fair.
Fair.
No, it is. Wow. I think my focus was just on the franchise. And so to spin it forward, I then choose to jump on the LeBron press conference. It's funny. I haven't really, I mean, ever since we've been back in the arena, I don't do Zoom very often. If I do, I kind of admittedly lurk and I'm a fly on the wall who doesn't ask a question.
You're a blogger.
I'm a blogger. Sorry. Hold on. You have no idea how great and funny that is because.
What are you saying, blog boy? You know, give me your
opinion. Blog boy. There it is. I literally, Slater, I was sitting on my couch watching the presser, which is like true blog boy fashion, as opposed to the office that you can currently see me in. I had the old man glasses like this, and I was being so lazy that I decided as I had my hand up to talk to LeBron, I didn't think they'd call on me because, you know, Zoom folks don't get a lot of questions these days. I get the call. But before I get the call, I have to decide, am I staying on the couch where the sunlight is flooding through the blinds and LeBron is going to think that I'm up in the clouds ascending to heaven? Or do I go to the office and show some professionalism? So I go to the office, but right as they go to me, I haven't gotten situated. So now like the laptop's in my actual lap facing up at the ceiling. And I look, you know, like somebody who just woke up. To LeBron's credit, he handled it in stride. And I asked him if he had any problem with the way this was handled and just said to him there was confusion and criticism among media and fans about the idea that the choice to fire Frank was handled this way. LeBron's answer was, I control what I can control. You know, I do think you can confidently say that that he didn't think very highly of the handling. And that's, to me, just a common sense thing. But it was wild. I mean, even having him, he wanted to talk early, and I get that. But that choice to talk early meant, you know, he's up there talking about a coach that hasn't even been fired yet.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing is, which I was going to say before, is that, like, I don't think it matters in this context that he won a championship. Like, yeah, it puts him up in a higher esteem in Lakers history because he won a title. And there are very few coaches who are still coaching who have actually won championships. But, like, it's just if you're – that's just not the way to handle the business when it gets out that somebody is getting fired tomorrow,
sure,
independent sure of how many rings they have on their fingers. You know what I mean?
Well, it's Fred, it also speaks to – it just speaks to the – it's an extremely fair criticism of their franchise now to analyze the, you know, organizational cultural value that they put on coaches. And even honestly, going back to, I mean, it's wild because given the previous relationship between Phil Jackson and Jeannie Buss and the personal dynamics there, even when Phil was inspiring championship parades, you know, he had his run-ins with Jerry Buss, and the coaching component of how they see coaching in this franchise, it continues to be underwhelming. That bared out even with the way Frank got hired. We all know he was the third option behind Ty Lue and Monty Williams at that time. I don't think it has to bear out in quite this messy a fashion, especially when he's not the one that built this roster that obviously wasn't what they were hoping for.
And the other part is it didn't have to be this messy because of sometimes things get messy because there's contentiousness. And at least from what I gather, I mean, Frank Vogel is quite well liked, like, yes, just around the league. I mean, people on a personal level, taking what you think of him as a basketball coach, and I think he's a good basketball coach, but taking away what you think of him as a coach, like, people like Frank Vogel on a personal level. The first thing that you hear about Frank Vogel is what a nice guy he is. So it's not like there's some sort of, you know, I've covered situations where there's headbutting with the front office. Like, I don't think there was that sort of dynamic in this situation. This seemed to just be, there needs to be another basketball fit. And when a team underperforms to that level, there's always someone who's going to be the scapegoat or a couple people who are going to be the scapegoat. And often it's the coach. And that's what happened here. But it didn't need to be as messy as it was, especially when people were reporting with legitimate sources about the possibility of Vogel being let go at the end of the season a long time ago. I mean, this wasn't necessarily shocking news. The Lakers had a while to be able to prepare for a situation like
this. Oh, this thing was a wrap quite some time ago. I wrote on March 7th, I think, and Bill Orem and I wrote that barring a first-round playoff victory, meaning getting to these conference semifinals, or, God forbid, a conference finals appearance, that anything shy of that, like, those were kind of the only things that would force them to reassess. So he was dead man walking with, you know, in lieu of those things. So yeah, if you missed the play-in, and maybe this is a perfect segue, then you're going to be out. Slater, do you have any final quick thoughts Lakers-wise before we move on?
Winning Time was just renewed for a second season, and maybe they're just, you know, trying to create storylines for season 7 or 8, or if, you know, HBO just really, you know, wants to keep it down the hatch. Sam didn't like that reference. All right, we'll move
on.
No,
I do. I'm sorry. The facial expression was I was trying to. Why am I blanking on the Lakers coach who the last episode finished with his bike accident? Why am I? I can't believe I'm forgetting.
McKinney?
Thank you, Jack McKinney. Yeah. I mean, that the last episode was, you know, they're mastering kind of the age old art of the cliffhanger in Winning Time. You know, Jack McKinney has a well chronicled bike accident that ultimately sparks the Pat Riley era. But we're not quite there yet. But yeah, the show, it is, you talk about Inception type stuff. It's wild to cover these Lakers and some of these characters who are part of this HBO series while watching this series, where, you know, we know a lot of the individuals involved. So it's a lot to unpack there. All right, let's pivot to the play-in tournament. Before we do that, we are going to take a quick break to take care of a few sponsors. We'll see you on the other side and talk about the actual teams who are still alive.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, gentlemen, time to talk about play-in. Play-in comes before playoff. We've debated the merits of the playoff play-in tournament before. Let's do a quick updated, reassessment of this. I remain a big thumbs up on play-in. It's not perfect, but it kept a lot more teams.
Fred's the hater.
But maybe he's not a hater anymore. You know what I mean?
I'm running out of arguments here. It didn't kill the trade deadline. It didn't kill the race for the eight seed. It created more races.
You could argue it juiced up the trade deadline, right? Maybe the Kings and Pacers don't make that trade.
You could argue that. That is a thing that you're not arguing it, but you could argue it.
All right. So Fred's on board, Slater's on board, Sam's on board. Correct? Are we unanimous at this point?
Yes. Yeah, sure. I was on board from the beginning.
It depends on what mood I'm in when I wake up in the morning. Sometimes I feel just crapping on the play-in tournament.
There are people on board that shouldn't even necessarily be on board. Like the Warriors were victimized by the play-in tournament last season where they made the eight seed, but then you remember they lost two games and actually didn't make the playoffs despite being the eight. And you still got Steve Kerr then being this was a great idea. We should be able to win one or two if we can't, whatever. But this created really, I think it's just enough where it sounds, I don't want to say permanent because things can always change, but Adam Silver's talking it's pretty permanent.
It's also pretty rich, and I don't see this with any, how it is, we don't root for anybody, but given the fact that LeBron was very anti-play-in, it's pretty rich that this particular Lakers team, the play-in gods had this massive security blanket around this Lakers team that we have you, you're not going to be totally left out of the party, and even with that, these Lakers couldn't find a way to take advantage of this new landscape. Well,
It added such an extra month of drama to so many races. Yeah. We would have stopped caring about the Lakers a month and a half ago.
For sure.
There was such a separation between 8 and 9, but we could still watch, Lakers games and how much did we enjoy the late night drama of those Lakers games this season when it was hey, if they can win their, what's crazy though is the Spurs are 30, what are they finish at 35?
34 and 48.
Ooh.
No, that's
pretty bad that team has a chance.
I promised to the listeners we're going to get off Lakers. And so, yes, we're talking playing. But the Lakers thing is wild because, to your point, Slater, LeBron just said this morning that his ankle injury that he was dealing with recently, that he played in that game against New Orleans and he doesn't think he should have, and that he made the injury worse. And he has to now stay off of it for 4 to 6 weeks. So you had LeBron out there in playoff mode trying to, to sacrifice to an extent to try to get into the play-in. It didn't work, but that is all created by the play-in idea itself. So the games are breaking down as such. We record on Monday. I think we're coming out on Monday. So on Tuesday, 7 p.m. Eastern, the Cleveland Cavaliers are playing at the Brooklyn Nets. And then 9:30 Eastern, we have the Clippers playing at the Minnesota Timberwolves. We get to read John Krasinski in postseason basketball. Let's go Cavs. Well, I'll finish breaking down the schedule. Then on Wednesday, 7 p.m. Eastern, Hornets at Hawks. Game after that, Spurs at Pelicans. We go from there. Guys, go Cavs, Nets.
Wait,
here.
Sam, should we explain the
we should,
how it works first?
I
feel
well.
Like, pretty, I feel like
take the, right the 7-8s in each conference play Tuesday. A winner will be the 7 seed. The 9-10s play Wednesday. A loser is completely out. Winner of that plays loser of 7-8, and winner gets the 8 seed, and that'll be Friday night.
Man, this is why you guys are great co-hosts. Thank you for having my back there. Which game you want to start on?
Let's just go in order. Cavs Nets is really, I guess, probably the biggest of them all, because to me it's the only team left in the play-in, the only team in the play-in that I believe, we all believe, probably is a championship contender still, is Brooklyn. So
that's still your belief. Am I hearing you correctly?
Contender, I mean, you know what I mean. Like, where there's a realistic world that exists where if the Nets went to win the title, you wouldn't be completely stunned, Sam, correct?
I'd be pretty stunned. I don't know if completely stunned. No, I haven't seen enough defensively. Kevin Durant is incredible. And obviously, I got Lakers on the mind. But if you have a LeBron James playing the kind of year that you're having, the kind of year that he did, and his team can't even get in the playoffs, Kevin Durant can only be so good. And so Kyrie's special at times, and he's doing his thing. But at this point, I think I would be stunned if the Nets won the championship.
Look. It's going to be real interesting if they get out of the play-in tournament and Simmons comes back in the playoffs, which sounds possible. I can't think of another situation where a player of that caliber is going to be coming back after a year-long layoff with a new team playing his first games in the postseason.
Yeah. Like, until you said new team, I was like, wait till we get to the Clippers and talk about Kawhi Leonard. But yes, I agree.
Well, the thing
you.
Is, yeah, they, the new team. Kawhi Leonard and Paul George have experience playing together. Like, those guys, you know, that's going to be like riding a bike. They've gone back. They've played beautiful basketball together before. They've done it in years past. Simmons is a great player. He's so polarizing. When Ben Simmons is going right, I love Ben Simmons as a player. He is maybe the most versatile defensive player in the league. He's an excellent passer. He gets out in transition. He's flawed, but the stuff he does well, he does unbelievably. But the problem is, he's a specific fit, and being able to try to figure that in during the playoffs is going to be, if it happens, really, really weird. But at the same time, I feel like his return is kind of their only hope at being able to make a deep playoff run, just because, man, defensively, they are rough. Like, they are filled with holes. They do not have the rim protection. They are really in trouble defensively. And I think Simmons is good enough defensively to where he can get them there, because KD is still a really good defender, and I think we'll turn it up in the postseason. But they don't have a ton of guys outside of like Bruce Brown and KD and the hope of Simmons.
There's still such a fear level of Brooklyn, though. And to me, the greatest example of that is that Milwaukee yesterday dodged Brooklyn. I mean, they purposely basically lost that game to Cleveland. They sat all their main guys so they wouldn't be the two seed. If they had won that, they would have been the two. Instead, they willingly basically took four. I believe they're four, right?
They're three on the NBA.
Regardless, they accepted not having home court in the second round in a potential series against Boston by losing that so they could avoid Brooklyn. That to me tells you plenty. I mean, they're willing to, you know, hinder their path in the future because they just don't want the looming bomb that is the Nets. Regardless of what you think, I've seen Kevin Durant in a playoff series. I've seen Kyrie in high-level, high-stakes playoff series. You still don't want that in the first round. And that's why when we're talking play-in, they're the most, because they could also lose two games and then boom, suddenly they're out. That's why I was kind of bringing them up.
You know, yeah, what I found so interesting about that too? Sorry, Sam. Yeah, you know what I found so interesting about that as well? Is Milwaukee, of all teams, was doing it. Because last year, 2 years ago in the bubble, we see Miami oust Milwaukee unexpectedly early in the playoffs. And then last year, Miami ends up getting Milwaukee in the first round because Milwaukee just did not care. They wanted to face Miami. They wanted to face their demons. Last year, Milwaukee went up against Brooklyn and actually beat them in the playoffs. A different Brooklyn team, but Brooklyn with KD and, you know, kind of a hampered version of the rest of their roster. And this year they were openly trying to duck them. So I just think that's a really interesting way.
I was going to say, I wish we could instantly pull Bucks beat writer extraordinaire Eric Name on here to unpack his opinion of what the Bucks did yesterday. Cause it felt like it was maybe, and I don't want to sound naive, that it was maybe a little more nuanced than it might've appeared. First of all, the thought that I have is you sit your guys on a night when Dallas chose not to, and Luka Doncic ends up suffering an injury that might impact you know, his playoff availability. That's disastrous for the Mavs. So you reach that point of the year where every game that, even if it does mean one place different in the standings, if you size that up against the idea of losing somebody like Giannis Antetokounmpo because you played, I'm going to pick falling in the standings just for health purposes. As it relates specifically to Brooklyn, you know, I thought there was a Boston component where they essentially, Eric had tweeted that they left it up to the Celtics, was his conclusion. But I mean, so I don't know if it's totally fair to say they're running for the hills.
Let me ask you two. The Bucks, instead of playing potentially Brooklyn, are playing the Chicago Bulls. That's good.
Yeah, but Slater,
we would all agree that's better for the
No, Bulls, here's right? how I would push back. They might wind up facing a Nets team with Ben Simmons finally getting comfortable and having a tougher matchup.
Potentially, but I think it's a smart play to leave that off into the future.
I guess, but if Ben Simmons is Ben Simmons, then you just let them kind of find themselves with a guy who, you know, is an all-star and a defensive player of the year candidate. When he
sounds like a column you're going to be writing when they're down 2-1.
Man, I need to write five columns today. There's too much going on. All right, let's dive into the next one here. Although I lost my way on the schedule.
Well, what do we think about the matchup? We didn't even mention Cleveland.
Cleveland is really interesting. Wait, let's talk Cleveland, because this is interesting. Cleveland totally fell off because they lose Jared Allen and they lose Evan Mobley. And really the number one reason, if we're ranking reasons that Cleveland got off to such a good start, is because their defense was so good. Specifically, their backline defense was so good. Like Mobley and Allen, when those guys are on the floor together, Cleveland gives up 103.7 points per 100 possessions, which for reference would be by far the best defensive rating in the NBA. That's better than Boston's. It's better than Golden State's. It's better than anyone's. Mobley is back. He's looked good in his two games that he's played since coming back. And Allen, it sounds like he's not going to give it a go in the Brooklyn game on Tuesday, but he might be back for a first round series. Like, Cleveland,
or maybe
is,
you know, if they lose, they have a backdrop of, you know, they play the winner of Hornets,
right,
Hawks
for sure. And if Cleveland is tough, like they could win, it's one game.
Yeah,
Garland is excellent as well. I mean, he's really become a hell of a point guard.
They could they played like a few games ago, and that game basically decided who would have home court, and Brooklyn won. KD had pretty easy, efficient 36. All five Nets starters in double figures. Like, as we've mentioned, Brooklyn is exploitable, but Garland had 31 that night. Caris LeVert, you know, he can maybe give you, you know, if he gets hot, maybe they stay in the game. But when it mattered down the stretch, fourth quarter, Brooklyn outscored the Cavs in the fourth, 35-19. To me, it's just experience. And I just, you can feel, even watching that Pacers game yesterday, I think Brooklyn's going to toy around probably more than they need to. But when it matters against underwhelming teams like Cleveland at this point, considering their injury, I just think Durant will drag them past the finish line.
You may be
right.
I think
that's probably, you know, correct.
They end on a four-game winning streak, but man, before that, I mean, with KD on the floor, you're talking they lose, was it 4 out of 6 recently? They're just not reliable. Maybe it does all change. I mean, they losing to the Bucks in overtime, losing to the Hawks, losing to the Hornets, the Grizzlies. So, I mean, good teams, but we shall see. It would be something to see.
Seth Curry's availability is important. Does he play or not?
And he looked bad the other night. He tried to play through it, and he was out there on one leg, basically.
Yeah. So, I mean, not just even for the 7-8 game, but they need him.
Right.
I mean,
right.
they need him so bad. Everyone has talked this season about Kyrie not being there, obviously, and about the Harden stuff, obviously. But no Joe Harris. Man, Joe Harris is so important for them. And Harris being hurt for the entire season has completely changed their offensive dynamic. And Seth Curry was kind of supposed to bring in what the Harris can do just as a shooter, and he can run a little pick and roll and all that. And just not having the real Seth Curry, who is an excellent role player, that would really hurt them.
We moving on to 9-10 Hornets.
We are, yeah. Slater, you're going to take the lead. I will say, as a final thought on Nets Cavs, this, you could do a whole podcast on this. I mean, if you told me that Simmons wasn't going to play to this point, you know, that one of the what ifs for me is, crunchy though it might have been between James Harden and Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, based on the personal dynamics, it is wild to think that, you know, if the Nets would have just stood pat and tried to get James right and still have James Harden as part of this team, then, you know, we'd see what they could do. But we will never know. All right. Clippers, T-Wolves, Slater, West Coaster extraordinaire. My mind immediately goes to what you already kind of alluded to. I don't know the latest on Kawhi Leonard and the remote possibility. I don't think he's going to be available for play-in.
No.
Yeah. But, you know, that's looming. And then you've got Minnesota. I'm legitimately excited to see how they comport themselves on this stage, because Anthony Edwards has reminded us the other night how special he is. Karl Anthony Towns is, I think, got to be on everybody's All-NBA ballot somewhere. Patrick Beverley was a bit of a culture kind of lifter with their group, with a defensive mentality. So even without Kawhi and with Paul George back, I think this is going to be a kind of a scrappy, dirty, fun game.
My first thing my mind goes to is like, how are Memphis and Phoenix watching this game? Who are they rooting for? What, Matt, you know, because like, and we probably could have talked about it out east with, it's weird now with this playing where you end the regular season and the 1-2 seeds don't know who they're playing yet. Whereas, you know, I'd spent all morning breaking down Warriors Nuggets, but if you're sitting there as the Grizzlies, you know, who do you want? I think you probably want Minnesota. You probably want the home team to win because, you know, Ty Lue, Paul George is back. Norman Powell is now back. Those are two offensive forces around what I think is already kind of a scrappy, veteran, experienced playoff team. Ty Lue is great in a playoff series. I didn't want to immediately go to, you know, who does the winner get and who should those top level. But as we talk about long term, how this matters most in like the bigger picture playoffs, what do you like? Who should Memphis want to win this game?
I would not want to play the Clippers. I'll tell you that much. I mean, Paul George is back. He's shooting the hell out of the ball since he returned. Shooting better than 50% from three, I think, since he came back from his injury. They are rolling right now. I know this is all late season crap and all
they
of that.
They crushed the Thunder by 50.
But it's not even that. They've been five in a row to close the season. They rested basically their whole team against Milwaukee. And Robert Covington goes for 11 threes in that game last week. Their role players are playing extraordinarily well. The offense is rolling. If you want to argue with me that Ty Lue is the best postseason coach in the NBA, like I have no problem with that argument. The guy consistently makes these extraordinary adjustments, whether it's rotational, whether it's schematic, across series. And we've seen it time after time after time, most notably and most recently with that Utah series last year, when they find Terrence Mann going off and they just start to run their offense with all that spread pick and roll, attacking Utah's perimeter defenders. And they are so well coached. And I just have so much faith that if they get into the playoffs, he will find ways to exploit whoever he's playing weaknesses and their experience too. I mean, I think that's a legitimately good team, even without Paul George.
So this is what makes the play-in different though, where like last season, Ty Lue by like middle of each series had found an adjustment that turned the series, right? They're down 2-0 to Utah. He finds it. Even the Phoenix series, they didn't end up winning it, but he found some stuff within it because he's very good game to game adjusting and attacking weak spots of the other team or wearing down a star. He used to always love to throw Steph Curry, you know, in as much action as possible, believing by later in the series, Steph would be tired. But the play-in is not, you know, about game to game adjustments, film, work, you know, switching cities. It is one game. It is in Minnesota. And the Timberwolves have had a great season. I can imagine, you know, reading enough John Krasinski this season, that's just going to be an electric environment because Minnesota's been waiting for this type of game. It seems like they've somewhat fallen in love with this young core. Anthony Edwards, I'm sure, is going to be fired up. Towns has had a great season. They're really difficult to defend. And they've been better than the Clippers over the course of the season. I don't even know what the Vegas line is. It's probably like a round to pick them, but what do you guys think about this particular matchup in a one game set?
Everything you said lands. I mean, the Minnesota environment component is big, and this is going into the Wayback Machine, but I've been in that building way, way, way back when the folks were really excited. In fact, the first playoff, I think the first playoff series I ever covered was in Minnesota against the Kings. You know, with Kevin
the Garnett's. Land before time when dinosaurs roamed the earth and the Kings played.
I guess that makes me a dinosaur. Games. But yeah, like, you know, I think I've told the story on the pod before, but watching, you know, Chris Webber's 3-pointer from the right wing rim out, I think in game 7 to, you know, let the Timberwolves advance. So that place, it has a passionate fan base, and they've survived the Ricky Rubio years and, you know, and the David Kahn years and everything. Although poor Ricky, I just put him in exactly the same sentence with David. That was a little rough, but like a lot of disparity, or a lot of, you know, desperation out there. Wrong word choice, but it'll be fun. And I think I'd be surprised if Minnesota doesn't meet the moment, take care of this Clippers team, but the Clippers can get hot, you know, with Paul being back. It's interesting too, because I haven't looked at the splits recently, but Reggie Jackson without Paul would have those nights where, you know, it might feel counterintuitive, but like Reggie could win you a ball game. And, you know, with Paul back, obviously that, you know, usage aspect of that changes.
Yeah. You know, I think both of these teams, maybe more than in the East, have a safer landing spot in the second play-in game. You know, if they lose, they get the winner of Pelicans Spurs, and Pelicans Spurs, you know, were way under 500. Although, you know, if the Pelicans do win that, the way McCollum's playing, they've been playing like a better team lately. But it's just, to me, there's not as much pressure as, like, if, let's say, the Cavaliers lose to the Nets, I could definitely, like, if Cavs play the Hawks, I'd probably pick the Hawks, to be honest. We can get to those matchups, though.
Yep, so the 9-10 breakdown here as we move to Wednesday. And before we do that, let's actually squeeze in our second break. On the other side, we will talk about Hornets and Hawks against Spurs and Pelicans, the second round of play in action coming up next.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
All right, gentlemen. So the squads that have got to win twice to get in are coming at you on Wednesday. And we will start with Hornets Hawks. Gordon Hayward out for this game. He's been out for the most part since, I think, January 23rd. Hornets playing roughly 500 basketball since then. LaMelo Ball, I looked this up yesterday, one of six players since late January to average 21 points, 7 assists, and 5 rebounds with a pretty elite group hitting those kinds of marks. So, but they just, they are thin without Gordon, who's, you know, 4-year, $120 million deal signed a couple off seasons ago is looking pretty rough at the moment, given the continued, you know, the physical problems that he's had. But Trae Young is coming at you as a guy who I also think is all NBA worthy, and who, while the Hawks have been a disappointment this year, I don't think Trae has. So how do you guys see this game?
I think that, you know, the Hawks probably have the most on the line of these eight teams. I think changes could be coming to that roster beyond Trae Young if they don't get through this play-in, because probably unrealistic expectations were, you know, kind of heaped onto them after they made the East Finals last year and almost actually got through the East, which is like crazy to think about now. And it just, it felt like there's been a lot of moments over the last couple of seasons with the, you know, even one when they ended up firing Lloyd Pierce and hiring Nate McMillan, where they've almost shaken up the core. And I just feel like because the play-in has allowed them to have enough of a landing spot this season out East, where they knew they were going to at least get a couple cracks at it. They didn't make any big changes, but I'd flip this over to you, Sam, but like, do you get the sense that, like, you know, the Hawks could be a real like shake it up type team this summer if this is their final week, if they lose one of these two games?
Yeah, I do, because one of the only things going for them is that even if a lot of the money that they gave out last offseason isn't working for them in this context, for the most part, the contracts they gave out are movable. And I think Travis Schlenk, I mean, he was pretty candid. Shoot, it was in the first half of the season. You know, their GM obviously talking about the idea that, I forget how he phrased it, but you don't often hear GMs publicly say, you know, maybe I gave out money to the wrong guys, you know, and I don't mean to be too loose with the paraphrasing there, but that was the message, that, you know, he had some buyer's remorse in terms of some of the talent that they counted on in the previous offseason. So, you know, who does that mean? You've had the John Collins, Clint Capella dynamic there that I think has to get reexamined. You know, Bogdanovich didn't play, you know, like he had the year before. So there are movable parts. And I think that in terms of expectations, ownership, things of that nature, they want this team to contend for the title in the East. So I think, you know, it would not shock me to see him shake it up.
Yeah. And Sam, you mentioned ownership, taking that a step further at the end of last season. I remember ownership did a press conference and talked about, hey, you know, we're not necessarily talk about being candid and said, you know, we're not, and I'm going to paraphrase, we're not going to be able to keep every single one of these young guys. Eventually the roster is going to get too expensive and not everybody is going to stay. And I appreciated the honesty when they talked about that. They could do something. It's not just those guys. I mean, DeAndre Hunter is somebody who I think is kind of stagnated in his third year. I still like his potential a lot.
They already flipped the Reddish piece, right?
They already flipped Reddish. I mean, that was as much to do with Cam Reddish wanting to be flipped as it was about anything else. You know, Herter they signed to an extension that I think is very movable last year and is going to kick in next season. So like you said, they've got movable pieces. This game is going to be, honestly, has the potential to be unbelievably fun. Two of the best offenses.
Trae Young, LaMelo Ball. Yeah.
I was just going to say that, Fred, to set you up. It's the second best offense in the league, Atlanta, which I can't believe. They finished the season 2 in offense. And the 8th best offense, people don't realize, with the Hornets. But also, the Hawks have the 5th worst defense, and the Hornets have the 8th worst defense. So, horrible defenses, great offenses. Go ahead.
Could be a million to a million and one. Two insanely dynamic point guards going head-to-head. LaMelo is and it's not just that they score. Like there are offense, you know, you mentioned like offensive efficiency, and there are offenses that play slow when they slice you apart and they're really good. And it's like, you know, like Phoenix, excellent offense, but they play slow and they slice you apart, and Chris Paul just runs pick and rolls and he just beats you with a million paper cuts, and then he finds like Ayton for a layup, and that's their offense. And it's effective, but it's not the most exciting thing in basketball history. These guys play fast. Charlotte gets on the break. You've got Bridges throwing down dunks. You've got John Collins throwing down dunks. I feel like this is like a really, really fun matchup from a basketball aesthetic standpoint.
In front of an Atlanta crowd that historically just kind of loves highlights, right? They're just like, you know, just toss the alley-oops. I feel like even if LaMelo does like a through the leg, they'll be like, eh, whatever, let's cheer for that one too. That was kind
of cool. And in front of Eric Collins, the Hornets bombastic broadcaster.
I don't know that they get the game, sadly. I don't know that the local broadcast gets
the I think play. The local broadcast gets... Well, I think it's simul... I think the play in the simulcast. I could be wrong. I hope I'm wrong, because Eric Collins calling a LaMelo Ball to Miles Bridges alley-oop in a postseason game is everything that the world needs. It's just all anybody needs to be happy.
Agreed. Fun fact on the Hawks front, and this is my terrible reach of an attempt at humor. Jamie Gertz, the wife of Hawks owner Tony Ressler, once starred in the cult classic The Lost Boys, and the Hawks should not be reenacting Lost Boys 2, maybe? Oh, damn it, I didn't land it.
What you could really say is hopefully they won't get wiped up in a Twister.
She wasn't Twister. Yeah. That's right. Lost Boys, one of my favorites. All right. Last but not least, the Spurs here. Greg Popovich, the great, you know, all-time winningest coach in NBA history, deserves that respect. That, you know, he talked the other day, Pop did, about, he was asked, I believe, by Tim McMahon of ESPN, why he and they chose as an organization not to go full-on tank at the end here and win games and get into the play-in tournament. DeJounte Murray had a great year. You know, paraphrasing Pop, essentially that it's just not in his blood, and he didn't figure out how, from an execution standpoint in the locker room, to go to his players and say, all right, fellas, you know, here's what we're going to do. Give me 60% effort. That he just, it got to a point where it was uncomfortable, and he said, we just got to play. So here they are against these Pelicans, who have a different kind of story. They start 3-16. Folks are, you know, understandably at the time, you know, they're kind of going for Dave Griffin's head in the media, talking about, you know, pretty rough stories about the way the Pelicans' lay of the land was out there. It was messy. J.J. Redick had a lot to say, former Pelican, you know, talking about the culture and Zion Williamson and negative, negative, negative. And then let's give some love to Willie Green, man. He gets these guys in the right direction. They make the C.J. McCollum trade that has worked well, and they look dangerous enough to beat a team like the Spurs, I think, and maybe try to sneak their way in. What do you guys think there?
They've Herb Jones is probably going to make all rookie team, and was a second round pick. Meanwhile,
they're making all defense, man.
That's possible. And you know, their first round pick, Trey Murphy, was kind of like fringe of the rotation. Jose Alvarado has had a great season. That's fine. You know, David Griffin has had some gem finds in the margins, even though some of the bigger picture stuff with the franchise obviously hasn't gone terrifically, particularly the Zion situation. And then the CJ McCollum trade really seemed to provide a stabilizing veteran force and an extra score that they really needed. And they, as I mentioned earlier, like the records tell you that these are two kind of lost teams that just kind of backed into the play-in and just are ready to kind of just get, extinguished from their season. But the Pelicans are a little bit friskier than the record might indicate. If they can beat the Spurs, they could be more dangerous than you might realize against a Clippers team in LA or against a Timberwolves team in Minnesota.
I mean, the Pelicans got off to an awful start. They were 1-whatever the heck they were, and they didn't have Brandon Ingram. And Ingram is a guy who's really flown under the radar this year. My God, he's gotten good. Like, he has become such an excellent passer. You know, when he went to New Orleans, he really flourished as a scorer. And I think he's always had potential as a passer and been solid. But he's really become one of the best passing and facilitating wings in the entire league now. And that's been a huge part of their offense. And pairing him next to McCollum, I think it's been a really good fit for them. When Ingram plays, they're over 500. Like they're a good competitive team when Ingram plays. Like, I would expect them, especially with the way they've played since the McCollum trade, to win this game. They should be the favorites. They are, and they should be.
Agreed. It should be fun. I mean, it's interesting too. We can maybe kind of go down this road as a final little segment here, guys. The way that the league built the play-in games in the context of the schedule, it served two purposes. Not only is it the anti-tanking measure, but it is a kind of an olive branch to the players after years of negotiations where the players were asking for more time or breaks in the schedule. And I'm talking about the teams that are not in the play-in. All the other playoff teams, the part that I love is that, you know, that 1 through 6 in each conference, they're going to come in fresh. And honestly, for me, I never learned more about like how important that is and what that looks like than if you go back to the bubble. You guys remember, like, and this wasn't even something you had to study the numbers on, but even the eyeball test, that the idea that these teams in the bubble were not getting on planes, not exhausted, not just absolutely pushing their bodies to the limits, you know, throughout the course of the whole playoffs, bared out in the quality of play and just the competition. And it was fun to watch. And it was at a really high level. This is not going to be that, but I think having an entire week to take a deep breath, you know, scouting wise, I love that aspect of it. These teams are going to be digging in. You know, they should be anyway, all the way throughout the organization, figuring out matchups, strategies, plan A, plan B, plan C, and then just body wise, having time to hit the reset button. And I think that's going to make the entire thing more fun to watch.
Do I get credit, by the way, for talking about a Spurs-Pelicans play-in game and not at all mentioning that we get to see Jakob Poeltl in the postseason? Do I get like bonus points for that?
You don't get credit.
Who is that? Jakob Poeltl.
You should be ridiculed by the Poeltl fan club that thought you were their king.
Right.
That's true. I am.
Who has a word game?
Yeah, I am. I am their king. It's going to be look. We're all deprived of the potential moment when Zion Williamson could be meeting Jakob Poeltl at the rim. The unstoppable force versus the immovable.
Well, he's going to get some Jonas Valanciunas, so it's not going to be an uninteresting clash of just, you know, mountains down there.
The Pelicans, by the way, since November 24th, it's not world beating, but when we're talking about a 9 versus 10 play-in game, since November 24th, which is really when around when Ingram came back after their 3-16 start, they're 33-30. They're top half of the league in offense and they're top half of the league in defense. And they have they're outscoring opponents by 1.6 points per 100 possessions. It's not world beating. It's not going to win your first round playoff series, but that's a nice, solid, competitive team, which, you know, is a really good turnaround. Like, I always think it's cool when a team gets off to a start like they did, 1-12 and 3-16, and like Willie Green keeps them fighting and they actually legitimately turn it around.
And Zion has showed back up. He's apparently playing 5-on-5. We don't expect him to like play in these playing games, but man, it does feel like a healthier environment around the Pelicans than if you were outside looking in a couple months ago when Zion has disappeared. You know, that you feel like David Griffin's job status is in a tenuous situation and you don't know what they're building at all. It does feel like they're at least maybe forming a foundation to welcome Zion back next season.
Well, guys, fittingly, I'm going to quote Joe Myers, the famous Pelicans play-by-play man, who was quoting Anthony Davis. That's all, folks. I think that's all I got from here. The Lakers are not part of this. You're shaking your head at me.
I liked it. I appreciated it.
Yeah. No Lakers in the play-in. Anthony Davis, who obviously forced his way out of New Orleans, wore the That's All Folks t-shirt. He is home.
Look, if only Kendrick Nunn had been healthy, if only they'd been healthy, they'd be winning the title. Literally, all right.
As we're on the pod right now, I'm looking at tweets from Rob Pelinka highlighting the training staff as one of the reasons that the Lakers faltered this season. To me, that's a little out of pocket.
Okay. You know what? Hold on. LeBron James, Russell Westbrook, Anthony Davis. LeBron James, you just said that immediately set a fire in me.
Fred.
This whole thing about the Lakers with if they only stay healthy, it's propaganda. It's ridiculous.
What? It's propaganda in the NBA?
LeBron James, Russell Westbrook, Anthony Davis on the floor together. In order for that team to be good, that team was constructed so that Russell Westbrook, LeBron James, Anthony Davis on the floor together, they can't just be okay. They're supposed to dominate because the minutes that those guys aren't on the floor together, they're just not going to be as good. That's the roster construction of that team. Those three guys on the floor together, over 21 games, they got outscored with those guys on the floor together by 3.5 points per 100 possessions. Come on. They got outscored with their three stars on the floor. If only played together, they would have been a minus 3.5 net rating team with those guys
Fred,
on.
You just don't see the ultimate vision, all right? They would be going for their third straight title if Davidson get hurt in the Phoenix series and if Kendrick Nunn and everyone was around this year. You're not seeing it, Fred. Stop with it your little numbers game. This is about stars in LA, all right?
It is not because of injuries. I'm not arguing injuries.
That's exactly right, Sam.
Injuries did not help.
Boot him from the Zoom, Sam. This is getting outrageous.
Injuries didn't help. It is not because of injuries. It did not work. The basketball didn't work.
Well, we'll never know, will we, Fred? We'll never know.
We know. We saw it. We saw the 49 losses.
We might
I'm fully
know.
Aware.
Russ might be back, and we'll get to see it all over again. All right. That's all, folks. I'm calling it. Thank you, guys. I'm going to keep it moving on a busy day. Thanks, as always, to the listeners. And Fred, I don't know what you're doing with your time, but Slater, I will see you soon on the playoff path.
You going Warriors-Nuggets game one Saturday night?
Yeah, I'll be there. Shout out to the NBA for giving us a 5:30 West Coast tip-off. I'm good.
I have a huge Warriors-Nuggets series preview coming out today. So anybody that's interested, read it on The Athletic.
All of you listeners who made it to minute 51, make sure you go read Slater's piece. I will probably have something coming. Today we had the news on the Kings and Lakers. Beyond that, we are still making the rounds. Fred, shameless promotion time. What do you got?
I'll be watching Jakob Poeltl highlight videos. So if you want to, I'm going to be hosting it at the local Poeltl bar. So come on.
You should write a preview that's all about Poeltl and like how he can just completely affect the Western Conference playoff race.
Oh, that's in the works.
Oh, great.
Poeltl's in the same genre of, I feel like, Covfefe. I don't know why that just crossed my mind. But gentlemen, appreciate you. We'll talk to you next time.